and your team for the very elaborate presentation. Quite helpful to as part of the process of dealing with the budget. Now, we received members who know to receive the two presentations on appropriation bill, but however, the emphasis for today's discussion will still be on the division of revenue bill. We appreciate the broad national picture on the appropriation, but the division of revenue is the main discussion for today. You've been at liberty to take water or stretch. I do not know whether for the sake of national treasury we pray for 2 minutes or we proceed. We proceed. Or you want 2 minutes stretch? Okay. Hey, national treasury, thank you for your commitment. And we'll allow space for the deliberations. The division of revenue, let it be our emphasis so that we deal with it. We have had areas that have been flagged, baseline reduction, changes in the grants, continuation of the reforms in the grant by National Treasury, and quite broad areas that have been flagged. Can we comment a specific area that requires clarity? I think the hand is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll take the hands as they are. So we can proceed, Mr. Kupi.
No. Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I must start by first
round. You must just mention your name and then so that for record this is our stakeholders.
All right. I'm Mr. Kupi NPC. I'm serving in both Appropriation and Finance Committee.
Yeah, not your profile, but your name here should be fine, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Now look, my where I'm seated, I'm on a daily basis getting confused. Your slide after the 20th slide, I suppose you'd be 21, where you talk about total transfers to provinces. I may not be falling into the term that so and so is from this province, therefore the allocation had to be more than any other, to give into the province more than any other province. But I'm just worried about the formula that you are using, because I'm getting confused. We talk about the rural needs of provinces, I'm not considering the population, and just in my understanding of the South African situation in terms of the 9 provinces. Northwest province is more rural and has more backlog in terms of basic services. Gauteng is more urbanized than the Northwest, and it has received more allocation than the Northwest province. Maybe if the formula can be explained so that we don't get confused about this issue. The other thing that I need to welcome, I'm very happy and very glad that Makosana local municipality disaster allocation at least finally we have been included in the 15-16 budget. That was great. Thanks for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shubi.
Chairperson, thank you very much. You will have to deal with me because I'm going back to the previous meeting when we dealt with the NTPPS issues that we raised then. excuse me. On page 59 of the budget review, at the top, reductions in transfer to provinces of 4.4 billion rand for the 2015-16 financial year. As a person, I sit here with the expenditure report of my province dated 31st of December 2014. In terms of this directive, reduction in transfers to provinces, and a provincial department like health and education overspending, how do you deal with that to correct it in that financial year? If we can just get clarity for the committee in terms of that. The other point is, Chair, and I raised it at the previous meeting in October when we had treasury as well, is a allocation that was given to the Northern Cape regarding the flooding disaster in the Orange River up to Upington. There was a zero expenditure on that allocation for about 2 to 3 years, and that money was returned to the treasury. I spoke to Mr. Sisi also last year when we met, and also Budget Council, that that funding be returned to the Northern Cape. I just want to hear what is the process now, where are we? Because it's got a serious effect on all farmers along the Orange River, including the emerging farmers, especially them, that have to bear that cost. That's a disaster funding. Thank you for the multi-year planning. We proposed that also last year in our meeting dealing with the NTDPS. So on the incentives to provinces that perform that criteria, which provinces are performing and which are not performing, if we can get that analysis. I want to see what's my province doing. Because I think in the Northern Cape, the biggest one. But all the people in the Northern Cape fit into the Cape Flash, 1.15 million people. So I think it's a given reality. About the multi-year planning. The other point here is referring to the allocation to municipalities as captured in the Division of Revenue at back. Right? The state where I'm deployed is coming back. I went through the allocations for the next 3 years. For the EPWP, there's a zero allocation. I phoned my municipal manager this morning and asked him what is going on. Well, I submitted the documentation to the relevant structures, and I've got a copy here which I will submit here. The fact is, these allocations have now been made stable. If their submission is correct, that this be corrected in the amendments or adjustments to the Division of Revenue later in the year. I know it can't be done now. I will table this, because I just received it by email. Then, Chairperson, regarding the Northern Cape again, bulk water supply allocations, I want to thank the National Treasury on page 298. For specific the Pixie region, we've got a serious problem there, but thank you for this. Chairperson, that proves the point of taking Parliament to the people, because it was raised there. In the pre-visits, in a formal taking Parliament to the people, and in the last day when the President addressed the gathering. So this is a result of the importance of the NCP and to look after the province interests. There's a very important page, Chairperson. Page 180 in the Division of Revenue Board. Very important page referring to the MIG grants. What has to be done by municipalities prior to the year of implementation, the following must happen, blah, 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 blah. What's the reality, Chair? I don't comply with that page. Not the Treasury comes and says, oh, I'm going to withhold your money. That's the reality, it happened. Now there are other factors, and it refers to another department, that's Environmental Affairs and Nature Conservation, that allocate the consultants to come and do an EIA. But in the meantime, they change the consultants. It impacts on the time frame of work to be done to submit a document to the Treasury to get the allocation. It's a serious issue. It happens with the small municipalities, specifically in my province. So this is something we will have to address, but it's an intergovernmental issue. And Mrs. Malajeng is a deputy DG for intergovernmental relations, so I think this is the right platform to put this on the table, because it has an effect. At the end of the day, it's the people that's going to suffer in that specific area. Excuse me, last one. The library grant. In my municipality, 630 million thousand rand was dumped in January. But we approved the allocation already in March last year, when we doubled the 2014 division of revenue. And I want the National Treasury to engage with the Provincial Department of Sports, Arts and Culture in Northern Cape and see what's going on there. Did they utilize the money to balance their books? Because that's what I think happened. It's impossible for a small municipality to spend this amount of money in the time frame left to the end of the financial year. They don't have that capacity. But there's a lot of that has to be done, because we visit the libraries in 50 towns. Excuse me. That's important, because the library is a source of information connected to the school. It goes together. Other people ask, why is nothing happening at the library? And that's the implication if the provincial department transfer the funds at the later stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Beer. Honorable Kawaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just start with an observation that you made, Chairperson, earlier on, that it's quite clear that this budget takes taken cognizance of the budget processes that went on leading to the MTBBS and the contributions of proposals made by the standing committees and the select committees, including the FFSU, which is much appreciated. Secondly, it does seem to me that the budget clearly links with very specific issues that the President raised in the State of the Nation address, and therefore it's a consolidation of an expansion of what the State of the Nation address alluded to. The third observation that one wants to make is that looking at slide 16, for instance, of the very first input, there is a lot of transparency in this budget process, which is appreciated. But one just want to raise one question. I note in that slide that on infrastructure expenditure, you made mention of a number of departments, and then of course including the general government infrastructure. One very specific area that is not mentioned is the broadband infrastructure. I don't know whether I raise this because it's a very important infrastructure, just in terms of taking the country forward in terms of connectivity, but importantly, job creation. I don't know whether it's located elsewhere or it's located here, but under a different topic, if you could clarify that. On slide 7, top of the second bullet, where you are referring to the cost-cutting measures, particularly on vacant posts, I do want to understand whether the National Treasury has now in possession of statistics with regard to the number of vacant posts in the different departments, including provincial departments as well. If not, if you could explain at what stage are you in the process of getting that information. I raise this because it dates back to a couple of saunas where the president said that all the vacant roles, standard posts must be filled. And in the fourth parliament, that was in the fourth parliament, we are in the fifth parliament, and these standard posts, vacant posts, are still lying unfilled. Now, because of the state of the economy, and the shrinking budget, already the minister says, let's raise some state funds through freezing funding of these vacant posts which have been lying unfilled. So it just become an urgent matter to deal with. The other issue that I would like to raise, the last one. When you say on slide 4, 7, again, on the last input, you bullet 3, the new fiscal package to transform our cities, that's where I am, bullet 3. If you could clarify, when you say that modifying the infrastructure grant by reducing the number of grants, are you saying you are reducing the grants or you are consolidating the number of grants into possibly one, you know, major grant, so that you don't have all sorts of grants flying about in the budget system? Thank you.
Thanks, honorable member. Thanks, honorable.
Thanks, honorable chairperson. Just reference to slide number 5 on the presentation on DORA. The reduction of 25 billion over 2 years. I would just like to know, how is that going to be achieved without service delivery being sacrificed or suffering? Because I find that might just be problematic. The other issue is regarding on slide 7, where it talks to the South African cities continue to be fined by that, etc. Now, investment is being made in cities to ensure that there's more work opportunities, etc. Should the investment not be, I know talk is made of rural development, but should there not be more investment in where the people are instead of investing in the cities, and again, the most of the people where they live, which is away from the cities, with a difficulty in coming to the cities to find employment. On slide number 14, that is the issue regarding the 8% for maintenance. I believe that should be done. That's one of the recommendations. But I believe that there should be more monitoring of that 8% of the amount of the capital budget being spent on maintenance, because obviously it's not done. Slide number 15. The National Treasury provides training to municipalities. My question here is that the responsibility of National Treasury to provide the training? Should it not be the responsibility of the provinces and of municipalities to train, provide for training in their budget? Slide number 22 and 23 is related to the issue that was raised by the first honourable member regarding the formula, and I know there was a request that the formula be made available, which I believe should be done just so that we also understand it. But what I'd also like to add to that is that, is the contribution to the revenue incorporated in that formula when the distribution of that revenue is done? So I'm implying that whoever contributes more to the revenue should obviously who are not necessarily obviously should also receive more of the distribution. And then the last one, which I found very interesting, that the presentation, the sample that was received about this surplus from the demarcation board, I'm very impressed that there's so many other important issues to focus on, and yesterday they were concerned about this additional 61 million or billion that was in the wrong municipality. So I just a comment, I'm very impressed that that information is known by the demarcation board. Thanks, Jose.
Thanks,
Honorable
Fick. Honorable Matropa.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the presenters. Chair, to follow on the colleagues, I would like to go back on the previous deliberations in October. As for, we had a concern around the lack of systems and mechanisms aimed at enhancing performance of school infrastructure programs, such as ACB. And we got a response from a national treasurer that they are supporting the provinces through infrastructure delivery improvement plan. But to share with this gathering, we had an oversight in February that we undertook in Eastern Cape, which raises a great concern because when we reached there, we found that there are challenges relating to expenditure on ACID, project contractor management. The committee learned that some contractors were given tenders in April, but nothing has been done. There was really nothing. There is zero performance. Other contractors, but we don't know that because we are assured that they are being supported. And as a result, I think it will affect on the social infrastructure in the that has been budgeted for, because out of 339 schools that were targeted for MPEF, only 91 schools have been finalized. And the problem of the contractors and not really adhering to the timetable that they have given. And I think the national treasurer, because they assured us that they are really supporting them, they need really to follow up. And it leads me to the other question, because I can see here there is a reduction in amount of 297 million in respect of the school infrastructure development grant that has been transferred to the occupation specific dispensation for education therapist grant. I'm not sure, Chair, whether is it not going to affect the ACIDI, the delivery of ACIDI, because there are schools, inappropriate schools as well as those that are not schools, that are supposed to be delivered in 2016-2017. Now, when you shift the funds, because originally there were like 500 inappropriate schools in the country, but now they are increasing like 527 and so on, hence the money is being shifted. Is it not going to affect the target of inappropriate schools that are supposed to be finalized in 2016-2017? And on the issue of delivery of the project or the program that has been planned, I think the issue of the EIA is a problem. We had a presentation for COPSA, which raised that the issue of EIA is a challenge. I think my colleague, the chair, has raised it. It's a challenge in the delivery of the programs of MEC. Secondly, the issue of the adequate planning. They said there is inadequate planning. Is it not possible for the national treasurer just to make it a condition to the municipalities, to the provinces, that when they submit the business plan for the MIG, also they indicate whether the EIA has been done? Because they submit this thing, they say we are going to do this project, all of a sudden the EIA is not yet done. So I think it's something that treasury need to consider. And lastly, Honorable Chair, is the issue of the down forward reduction of land care grant, which the provinces use it for EPWP. If there is that particular reduction, I think the my whip there has raised the issue of the president in 2011, Shona, raising the fact that the issue of job creation is critical. And now if you reduce what the money that they use for EPWP, because EPWP plays a critical role for those poor families to have something to put on the table. Now if there is that particular reduction, it's not really going to affect the target on job creation also, because it's part of the government priority, the issue of the job creation. And Chair, I'm not sure also, we appreciate that they have captured most of the things that we raised at different standing committees, select committees, around the issue of the medium-term budget policy statement, as well as the DORA. But when I look at here in the budget review, 2015, I don't see the recommendation that was made by the SCOA around the issue of the DORA. It's only the medium term, the one that they have responded to. And we appreciate that you just put them down and you responded to. But I'm not sure whether there was no anything around the issue of the DORA that the SCOA raised, because if my memory serves me well, there was something that we raised as recommendations around the DORA. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Not wrong. And Honorable Sandinia.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My question is whether the land reform backlogs will be addressed in this situation properly. And then on page 176, it talks about municipal demarcation transition grants. And it looks as though this project has been coming along for quite some time, that it expands over 3 years, and that the funding made available here is only to affect municipalities in Gauteng and KZN. So my question is, what is then happening in terms of the rest of the project that's being managed by COPTA? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Fandinga. Can I just get an indication from members? Because I want to allow, when National Treasurer responds, you should not go back again. Is there anything missing? If you are covered, Honorable DPA, you have transition. No, I'm just taking note that I thought I allowed you. Yeah, you have got one. Two hands there. Let me get the two hands. You will come back on that brief point. One sentence, yeah, you'll come back. Can I recognize you, Honorable Members? Can you start? Yes, Honorable Gail?
Yeah, no, I wanted to come in on the discussion of the land care grants, but Honorable Shabbat on that one. But the second one is before Treasury answers the location of the formula used to allocate the grants, if you consider the census of 2011, Gauteng is got the most population, if you use that in population. So then one has got a slight query, why then as KwaZulu being allocated more, and Gauteng is more. But then if you consider the census as well, these are rural provinces, which can always have lower allocations. One, the census is taken during the year. On weekends, the population goes back to the rural provinces, and also during festive season. So it means then they have to service those people with a lower grant. One would like you to consider that as well, because the census says, let's let that in. You know? One would be happy if you consider that in your phone. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Gaila. Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just find that I think my colleagues will agree with me. In the last 3 days, we've been bombarded with a huge amount of information, and it's quite a lot of stuff to take in and try and respond meaningfully to. I would like if we could have another meeting with National Prayer within about a week or so after that, if not to assimilate everything that we've had to address. But anyway, I would just like to ask a couple of questions. As regards the Moloto Road project, do I understand correctly that we are taking 149 million rand away from the provincial roads maintenance budget and adding that into the Moloto Road project? I have a huge concern with that because obviously our roads in a terrible state are now we're reducing the amount we're going to have to maintain them as a concern. On slide 7, it's the third last bullet point, says expanding opportunities for private investment in municipal infrastructure. While I applaud the sentiment, I have a great concern that what we're actually saying is we're going to encourage municipalities to borrow more money. Therefore, their debt profile goes up, therefore they've got less money to spend on service provision and stuff like that, because now they've got a debt service bill that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Should we really be encouraging, this is my question, shouldn't we rather be encouraging municipalities to collect the money that's due to them and use that money to fund things with rather than go borrowing money? My colleague mentioned the 8% maintenance target. This is a great thing to say in theory, and if municipalities actually did it, I'm sure it would work very well. Having served in a few municipalities, I know that when it comes to doing a budget, maintenance is one of those things that takes a lot, because you need to spend your money in other areas. You're under huge pressure to fund your projects. So maintenance tends to take a back seat. When you need money, you'll reduce your maintenance budget accordingly. It's a bit like depreciation. It's just a nice fiction to balance the books with. There's never any money really in the depreciation account. It's just there to keep the auditors happy. I have a similar concern with this. We need somehow to help municipalities to be able to put aside 8% towards maintenance. It would be great if you could do it, because it would mean you wouldn't have to come back and I just want to relate to the other thing. We're going to give municipalities now an opportunity to plan for refurbishment. But in order to refurbish, that's usually where there's been less maintenance, not more maintenance. And you say, if they've maintained it, then you're going to help them to refurbish. If they haven't, they can't. It seems to be the wrong way around, to my way of thinking, because if a thing has been poorly maintained, it's going to need a lot more refurbishment than it's been well maintained. Can we maybe look at this in some way to try and find a balance here, would be my question.
Thanks, Honorable.
Sorry, I'm not quite done, sir, if you allow me. I'm just trying to find it. I just want to say in general, the idea of either stopping funding or spending funding or reducing funding to municipalities that aren't performing, because they haven't managed to spend their allocations. I hear what you're saying, that this is, you have to do this as an incentive. But unless there's a consequence for those who are supposed to do the job, it's not going to be an incentive at all. And what you're going to end up doing is you're punishing the people who are supposed to benefit rather than those who are not doing their jobs. Because the people who work in the municipality couldn't care less. They're still going to get their pay at the end of the month, they're still going to go on holiday, it doesn't going to affect their lives in any way. And their bonuses, quite. Whereas it's the people out there, the people wanting the municipality to perform, to provide their services, who are going to suffer because the funding's been cut. I think this needs to be rethought, just with all due respect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Can I ask Mali Jeng and the team to respond? Honourable DPA, you wanted to direct it to FSSDOT, one sentence?
One sentence, Chairperson. I propose that provinces engage more with the FSC. Why? Because the FSC makes recommendations to the Treasury and to the Minister of Finance. We are piloting this thing in the Northern Cape regarding our challenges in Moshawe.
Thank you very much. Yes, I take note of it, Mr. Gaila. You can be released. Let's allow National Treasury to respond and the co-chair will take over from then to conclude our deliberations. And thanks very much, National Treasury.
We will keep on going back and forth and providing the response as much as we can. I'll kick off. I think we would welcome the opportunity to engage more thoroughly on the equitable share so that there is more understanding of what really drives the allocation. So, but what I might just want to point out here is that we need to understand that the provinces, you know, compared to local government, the services that they provide do not generate revenue at all. So if you have got children that are poor in housing, there is no way the province would have money out of its own coffers to educate those children. So I think that is why the equitable share, that is actually aimed at supporting service delivery, and therefore taking into consideration the factors that will impact on service delivery. It is driven by those factors, to say the population, but also not just the population. It is about the population that also gets served by the public sector, you know, that goes to public schools, that goes to public hospitals. So hence you will see the difference between KZN population numbers that has got high population and county that has got higher population than KZN, but KZN getting more of the equitable share. Because the demand for public services, perhaps due to poverty in KZN, it's much more than in Gauteng, for instance. So how we then kind of balance off with regards to the issue of now the backlogs, you know, because I think we must distinguish between the backlogs for infrastructure and actual providing of the service, where we want to make sure that the child gets almost the same per capita in education, allocation, in housing, and in Northwest and Northern Cape. So that's what the FUNADA tries to do, providing service. So there is also an element that where we balance off with regards to backlogs. So the formula doesn't take account of the infrastructure backlogs, because those are funded through conditional grants. So you realize that conditional grants have been allocated more to the provinces that need the infrastructure. Even in allocation for roads, I think we've now taken into consideration some of the factors that actually determines that would also benefit Northern Cape, for instance, the size of the road. So the conditional grants do take into consideration the issues of backlogs, and they do try to address the issues now of backlogs, that the service is equitable in a sense. But I think we would be able to engage more in that workshop. So the issue of the impact of the reductions that we are proposing going forward, versus what you may be seeing now as a potential spending, overspending of provinces. You know, one of the things on our DS that we know is that provinces always over-project during the year compared to what they will spend. Like, for instance, last year they underspent by almost like 6.2 billion, and yet in December they were actually projecting to overspend by almost the same amount. So I think the issues of projections is one of the issues that we are, you know, talking about a lot, to say how do you begin to have projections that more or less give a good indication of where it will come to come through. But I think also what we are also saying is there is more that we can do to improve our efficiency of spending. And I think what this problem that we have of trying to make sure that we can consolidate our fiscal targets through one measure of reducing expenditure ceiling is really about also trying to get the provinces to manage their resources properly, like the national government. So with personnel, we know some provinces, even in terms of personnel, you have got a situation where they have got excess personnel that they need to deal with, where perhaps they don't deal properly with exiting the personnel that has already reached the age. You know, so the issue of personnel management is one of the things that we want to emphasize. Plus, reducing costs of other non-core aspects where we have been spending large. We are saying let us be moderate. And I think with the measure that our Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is going to put in place now with regards to also moderating the cost of infrastructure, for instance, we expect that we will be able to spend more with the, rather to deliver more with the funding that we have once we are able to take control of inefficiencies and waste that we know are in the system. So we think this is actually a blessing in disguise that we don't have money. We're going to establish a better base of performance, you know, and better impact in service delivery in the process. I think on the issue of flood disaster, I think this was an agriculture allocation. So I'm not quite sure whether maybe Lenny will probably help with the answer there, what has been the issue. Because the issue that was that department was never able to spend the money. So if it has to be prioritized, to let you prioritize from the allocation to agriculture. You know, so but I think it's something that we need to check if we don't have an answer to it. So which province is underperforming? I think you probably will have an answer in terms of the infrastructure. So let me also comment on this issue of needs and the planning requirements. I think we do acknowledge that things like EIA are a problem. It's like also people will tell you that procurement is a problem. And I think some of these things is because people don't do proper forward planning. I think one of the major emphasis that we have placed, even in terms of introducing the incentive and the infrastructure program, is really about saying you can't plan for infrastructure like you are planning to buy, you know, a book. You know, so you need to have forward planning so that in this year you are already planning for infrastructure that we're going to deliver in the third year. So what has happened, unfortunately, is that the departments, even the provinces, even the provinces and the local government, what you see is that the concept of multi-year planning is not yet deep enough to influence how planning happens. And I think that is the measure that we are taking through how we review their budgets now, through some of the incentives that you are putting in place to say that you need to give yourself time. You know, don't try to do EIA and procurement planning in the year that the budget is supposed to be sent. So I think that's the practice that we are saying. If we can shift that, the government from that, then we will probably limit this problem. Because then if you know EIA will take you 2 years, then start 2 years ahead and begin to take that into consideration. So I think it's the discipline, it's the practice that we are trying to embed into the system. Okay, I think with regards to personnel, we do have the system, the transversal system that shows us, you know, the personnel that they can post, and so we do have an idea, you know, of that statistic. Obviously, we leave it to departments to begin to be the ones that make the decisions, because they will know which posts are really critical. Because if you have had a post that you haven't filled in for the past 3 years, why does it become an urgent post in the next 2 years? Because we must remember, on our members, that we are trying to say in the next 2 years, let us be a moderate. Let us moderate our spend. Let us find a way of saving our spending. So if we have managed to live without some of this post for the last 2 years, 3 years, then it means that we can still deliver and not reduce what we are delivering in the next 2 years until, you know, the economy has hopefully will have turned around when we can begin to look at expansion. So I think by the statistics is there, we do have an idea, you know, on what is going on there in terms of provinces and national government. What we cannot tell you is around local government. Okay, with regards to the cities, we are actually talking about consolidating, not reducing the allocations. And this consolidation also is also about ensuring alignment in the rules of the grant. You know, because at the moment part of the problem is that you have got fragmentation in our grants. you know, you've got housing grant that has got its own rules and laws. You've got public transport that has got its own. You've got, different Ghanas that are going to the cities. And yet, for you to impact on your space, you need to have integration, you know, across the sectors. So what we are trying to see is to say, how do we enable that? How do we enable the city to plan in a way that they can plan for mixed development, cross-sector kinds of projects, and begin to prioritize funding? Because part of the challenge is always is how do you sequence the funding? Sometimes you may need to make sure that your BRT system or your public transport system is in place before you actually can begin to densify, you know. So how does the grant system enable you to sequence your developments properly? So I think that's what we are looking at. And I think we're also looking at how do we make it a bit more certain, you know, beyond the 3 years, so that if you want to kind of leverage and use that as part of strengthening your balance sheet, then it becomes a sector that helps you even reduce the cost of borrowing in the process. You know, so I think those are the things that we are looking at, is how do you become more creative, because we are also saying the cities need to get more money, but that money should come from within. But we are also talking about responsible borrowing, because at the moment one of the major issues is around the kind of borrowing that the cities have done, which have gotten them into problems, that they have implemented on projects and programs that do not have feedback into their revenue. So if you borrow to implement social infrastructure support RDP only, then you will not be able to do that. So we are beginning to say also in what you borrow for. Where is the location? What will be the feedback into your revenue on what you are borrowing? So we are very mindful about the revenue money. So that is why we are also been looking at enhancing their own revenue. We are also looking at enhancing other revenue sources like development charges. So how do you begin to mix those and allow them to begin to borrow on the back of that those revenues generate? And then how do you begin to lessen the length of your period that you borrow, so that then you don't have to pay too much in one period? So I think those are the things that we are looking at. So how do we achieve reduction? I think I've already responded to this one. I will speak about reducing fund without reducing the allocation. We really believe that this would happen because we will gain a lot of efficiencies that will allow us actually to do more with less that we have. So I've already so why do we talk about investment in the cities and not invest in the flood areas? I think the problem here is the economy happens in our cities. Right, and I think it is a global trend that urbanization happens whether we like or not, because there is always that potential that your life will be better in the cities. But we are also saying there's economies of scale of agglomeration that the other cities in the world have actually taken advantage of and made urbanization to drive economic development. And when cities are growing, national fiscal is growing, then you have got money that you can begin to take to the rural area. So that is why we are saying we are not adding any money from the cities. And in fact, this reduction actually impacted more on them than on the rural areas. On the rural areas, we have had more money. But the problem is if the fiscal is not making money, you will not have money to subsidize the rural areas. And the marginal cost of bringing development in the rural areas is very high, because you don't have even the density that will allow you to have those efficiencies that you need to begin to drive the economy, efficiencies, innovation, bringing people together. So whether we like it or not, urbanization does drive economic development. Look at global. But if it's not properly managed, it becomes a social ill that we are saying we need to avoid that, because it will happen whether we like it or not. So we do want to monitor maintenance and spending. So what we have done now in our budget, we have now, because before we never used to have, we used to have just a line in the budget that would say operation and maintenance across the sector. Now we are reinvesting each sector like in the trading account. So when you look at the municipal budget, which we are now making sure that they are actually, you know, credible, and that reform in the budget is embedded, it does show for each sector you are able to see how much are you spending for water projects, and how much are you spending for operations, how much are you spending for maintenance. And then we are able to see how much you are actually budgeting. And we are also able to see how much revenue and how much is going up. Because one of the practices that we want is that this cost of starvation, where you will take from electricity to other things and not maintain, is not sustainable. So part of that will enable even the regulators like your NESA to begin to see whether the guys, okay, the municipalities are actually complying with the maintenance requirements. So now in terms of the reforms that we are introducing, we are already trying to close the loop that will enable us now to monitor better and also to regulate better in the bigger process. Okay, you can start and then I'll continue.
Okay, with regard to, and like what Jane pointed out, that it would actually be quite good if we can have a session on the local, on the provincial equitable share, but possibly also the local government equitable share, because that by itself just requires quite a bit of time as well, and otherwise we really couldn't make a presentation for over 2 hours, so it's really quite difficult to always get the balance right between the two. But maybe just on the provincial equitable share, all the information that's used, or all the data that's used in the provincial equitable share formula, is actually the details per component is included from pages, say, 77 of the document, right up to page 82, which explains each and every source of data that's used in the equitable share formula. And what is quite important, like managing has pointed out, is that we do not use like all the school-going children in Gauteng, for example, or the school-going children in KZN, for example. And the same will apply for all the other provinces, but those that use public schools, not private schools as well, because the private schools is not the responsibility of the province is concerned. And the same applies, for example, if you look at some of the other services as well. But it could be useful if you have got a detailed session and can take you through all that as well. Then with regard to the Northern Cape flooding, the question posed by Honourable De Beer, I've got the good news to tell that the money was, for drought relief was returned to the province, and 50 million was attached to that, and of that 42 million has been spent to that. I'm sure that is good news. So it shows that if the committee gives us work to do, we do it. Then with regard to the question which provinces have performed well and which provinces have not performed well, so all the thick bunch of documentation annexed W1 of the Division of Revenue Bill is really good reading, because if you then go to page 84 of the annex explanatory memorandum, it indicates which provinces have complied. So it indicates, for example, if you look at table W1.22, it indicates that if you've got an amount under the incentive component, then it means you've complied with the conditions, and maybe just to highlight the ones that's complied, is Eastern Cape is getting incentive allocation, Gauteng is getting incentive allocation, KZN is getting an incentive allocation for education, and so is Northern Cape, and so is Northwest, and so is Western Cape. Then if you go to page 86, it then indicates who's complied with the health conditions. And just as a matter of interest, on health is less compliant than with regard to education. But Eastern Cape again gets an allocation, KZN again gets an allocation, Northern Cape also gets an incentive allocation, and so does Northwest and Western Cape. But you can get all the details on table W1.23 that indicates both the basic allocation as well as the incentive allocation. Then with regard to the query on page 108 on concerns that smaller municipalities will not have the capacity, the reforms that we've currently introduced to have a better planning with regard to municipalities are currently just implemented in the aggregates, and not the rest of the municipalities. The first step is to get the aggregates to actually comply with the conditions, and then over time extend it to secondary cities, and it's more the longer term that the smaller municipalities are, because most municipalities at this stage will not comply. And it's secondly also some of the incentives are only applicable to larger municipalities, i.e. this integrated planning, you know, to ensure integrated planning will not be as relevant, for example, with rural municipalities. Julia will deal with the library's query. Then there's a broadband infrastructure query that will be dealt with Raquel. And then with regard to the maintenance query, agrees that additional support needed. Also the query about the balance between maintenance and refurbishment, we cannot agree more. And that is why it's extremely important that because we're now extending it to refurbishment, that you put in place the right conditions, that you don't just get refurbishment because you've done maintenance badly. That you actually need to be able to prove, particularly as the refurbishment money becomes ingrained in the system, that you've actually done it because you've done proper maintenance, and it's due to any, because refurbishment will come in place whether you maintain well or not, but that the refurbishment comes in place when it's needed to come in place over the life cycle of the asset. And that is critically important. That's why refurbishment money will not just be given, it will be subject to municipalities doing the right thing, i.e. putting in place a life cycle asset management program, but also the sufficient operating budget for maintenance. So that is definitely a key issue that will need to be considered. Then the issue with regard to municipal or national treasury, why are we training municipalities? Isn't it the responsibility of provincial treasuries? There's 17 municipalities because of the size of their budgets and also the impact on economic, you know, the broader macroeconomic stability of the country that has not been delegated to provinces, i.e. National Treasury monitors them directly. So those are the ones that National Treasury directly interacts with and also gives support. But with regard to the municipalities that do not, that National Treasury does not monitor directly, that is where we as National Treasury provide the necessary support to provincial treasuries to build their capacity to actually monitor municipalities as well. So we've got a dual approach there. Then the question was, do we take revenues into account when we determine the equitable share? Again, we can deal with that in more detail when we with a detailed session. But we don't, except there's an economic component in the provincial equitable share, which to some extent it does take into account the amount of economic activity that takes place, but not the actual revenue collected, although that does have a bit of an impact on the revenue that the province collects. But in the municipal equitable share it is, because some municipalities collect like 80% of their own revenues and they are very unreliant on transfers. The other municipalities, 80% of their revenue comes from the fiscus and their own revenue collections are very low. So it does take it into account. Then with regard to the Stobart and the city one, Julia will deal with. Then with regard to the NIC and the EIA's one, Mother Jane has already touched on it, but maybe if I can just add to that as well. Maybe what would be quite good and useful to do is that as part of the 2016 Division of Revenue Bill process, we add that as a new condition to the conditional grant framework for the MIC. The reason why it would be difficult to include it as part of the 2015 Division of Revenue process is because this process didn't take it into account and it will delay then the project that's currently on the table. But it could possibly be a very good condition to add for the 2016 DORP, and let's inform municipalities now that this condition is going to be added so that they know and they're aware of that condition. Then the land care grant reduction and how is it going to impact on EPWP, that's most probably one of the grants where in the provincial sphere, because overall on the provincial share, there's relatively good spending on conditional grants, but among that grant, the spending has actually been quite low. So it will not impact on the EPWP. But the money is also, again, if you look at the MTF on page 83, it actually indicates that over the MTF that money is again put back in the system as well. Then with regard to the why is all not all recommendations included, last year we've had about 40 recommendations that we had on the list, and where we repeated a lot of the recommendations that we already submitted to Parliament that didn't change. So it just took too much time, so we just decided what we would rather do is we focus on the recommendations where there are changes in terms of previous responses that we provided to Parliament and then add the new ones. Basically, when a recommendation has not been included, it was submitted to Parliament, say, in 2014 already, and there were no changes. Then the transitional grant over 3 years, that's also a very popular question. And why is it only for municipalities of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal? The transitional grant is just allocated to municipalities which has formally been adopted and approved by the Municipal Demarcation Board, and where the municipal boundaries will be redemarcated as part of the 2016 elections. We know that there's currently new ones on the table that is outside those two provinces, but they're still under consideration and has not yet been approved. But if they get approved, it will need to be considered as part of either the adjustment budget process or the next budget process as well. Then with regard to the Malotta Road, if I could just also refer the member to page 83 of the provincial conditional grant allocations. The grant has been reduced by 159 million, but if you actually look at the size of the provincial roads grant, it's quite large. So it does not result in actual reductions to allocations. Just to indicate, the provincial road maintenance grant was 9.3 billion in 2014-15. It increases to 9.8 billion in 2015-16. It increases then to 10.1 billion in 2016-17. And over the last year of the MTF, it increases to 10.8 billion in 2017-18. So it definitely does not have a reduction in the allocations that go to the provinces. With regard to the last one directed at us, doesn't the reduction in allocation penalize the people on the ground, and shouldn't we take steps against the grant administrators that do not spend the money? That's most probably a very valid remark. The only question is, if the money is not really spent, people do not really get the services. And that is something that's quite complex, and managing also answered that question in yesterday's response, that most probably we need much more aggressive action against defaulters going forward as well, which is not always popular, because you get really you get instances where you get perennial things of non-compliance, and there's just absolutely no guilt about not even doing certain things. For example, some municipalities have now owed Eskom for the last 3 or 4 years for bulk electricity charges, which they do just not pay back. And the court has already made certain decisions in that regard. And that can require quite drastic action going forward to ensure that those monies are paid going forward. And that won't always be very popular, because it can result in actually some of the equitable share money being withheld from that municipality, and National Treasury then making that payment directly to the service providers as well.
Okay, under the bill, I'm afraid we will have to get back to you on the library grant, because I would have to contact my colleagues at the Department of Arts and Culture to find out whether they did in fact do dumping to the municipalities. Oh, they are. So I will have to get back to you on that. In terms of the school's backlog grant, I mean, I think Mary Jane alluded to that in the beginning as well. Where we've made reductions, we've tried to say, let's reduce the things to match the ability of the department to spend. So the school's backlog grant should have been completed over a 4-year period. It's now going to be completed over a 7-year period. So the number of schools that were on the list, that's for the number of schools that will be completed, will just take a longer time. And clearly there are challenges, which is what partly why IDIP exists, is to help the province employ suitably qualified people that can do procurement, that can do contract management, etc. So hopefully the challenges that we find in the Eastern Cape should be resolved. In fact, the Eastern Cape is one of the departments that got the performance incentive for both education and health. So I feel a bit more confident that they will be able to spend the money. In terms of using that money to fund the OFD, the OFD was just not cut. So the money wasn't taken to the OFD. The money is part of the 25 billion rand reduction. And the OFD didn't get the cut because the OFD funds actual personnel expenditure.
On the broadband, the allocations for broadband are included on vote 32, that's the telecommunications and postal services vote. Is a program 5 is called ICT Infrastructure Support, and there's a specific sub-program. In program 5, there's got the broadband allocations. These allocations amount to 1.1 billion rand over the NTF period. The allocation in the infrastructure table forms part of that, but there are also allocations that are in other areas, in other economic classifications such as compensation of employees and goods and services. The allocation in the table itself is for 740 million rand, and that's for the implementation of the first phase of the digital development pillar.
Are we done, Mr. Treasurer?
Yes.
Okay.
Clarify what Honorable Sikh is gone. Because he raised the issue of, you know, the point that Wendy was referring to around the mistake that was picked up on a disaster allocation. Actually, she meant to say National Disaster Center.
What do you call it?
Yeah. National Disaster Center picked up the mistake. It's not actually the demarcation board.
Honorable members, I think we should thank National Treasury for job well done. I think we are all informed. We understand the division of revenue. We would like to excuse them. Whilst they are taking their bags, just short announcement, joint committee meeting again on Tuesday for the select and spending control. At 10 o'clock we are with the budget office. And I'm told that the venue is likely to be the old assembly chamber at 10 o'clock. We'll then go through the overall budget there once again with the analysis of the budget office. And I thank you very much. I want to thank my co-chair, chair of the select committee, for having steered the ship, and all our stakeholders who are here, and all the honorable members. You are liberated. And thanks to the provincial delegations. I know they've been here since the budget day. Travel safely home.
Thank you. Yeah.